I wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart.
The great Tony Bennett kicking things off today.
Somebody twice as
is this one of the greatest songs of all time, or what?
As
I think it is. You know why I'm playing this?
I'm trying to come up with an answer there.
Today, Tony Bennett turns 93 years old.
93.
Happy birthday, Tony Bennett.
To be true.
And he still sounds as good.
It still sounds.
This song was recorded, like 1960, 61, something like that. He still sounds this good.
Yeah.
If you saw him at Ravinia.
This was around the time of I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Right. I love this song. I want to be around to pick up the pizza. It's one of my favorite songs.
This is one of those songs that he just owns.
Yeah.
You know, like Sinatra owned several songs that will always be associated
with
him.
Right.
Yeah, this one is for Tony.
This is for Tony. So happy birthday to him. 93 years old, or as your dad, Schwani, or my mom would say, what, that kid?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
My mom enjoyed that. Does your dad like Tony Bennett?
Oh, sure.
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Tony Bennett.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think I've mentioned the story a couple of times when he and my mother went with some friends of theirs. He came into Chicago to see Tony Bennett at the Empire Room at the Palmer House.
Wow.
That was, my mom didn't stop talking about that for a week or
more. Of course.
More. Yeah.
Of course. That was a big deal showbiz.
Huge
place
deal.
Back in the
day. Yeah.
All the big stars played the Empire Room.
I mean, how about this dinner in that room and then a show like that?
Right. We need,
wow.
Well, there's that show that's over at the Cumbria Hotel right now, Teatro Zinzani. Remember we had that guy a couple of weeks ago that was on here? That performer named Cesar, I believe.
Cesar.
Is the character that he plays.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a big tent that's set up in the Cumbria Hotel, and it's sort of like a Cirque du Soleil show, but there's dinner also. I'm all for eating stuff while you watch shows.
Eating stuff.
Yeah, I'm all for that. And if you can make it as sloppy as possible, spaghetti.
Sloppy Joe's.
Great. Sloppy Joe's. Oh, perfect. Yeah. Sloppy Joe's would be perfect for that. That requires a lot of slurping. There's nothing annoying about that while you're trying to watch a show.
And a lot of gulping noises.
That was a big deal back in the day. The Empire Room. Everybody who was anybody played the Empire Room.
Yes, they did. And now you got this hootenanny stuff going
on. Got this crazy palooza, schmooza, whatever it's called out there.
Lollipop Fest.
Lollipop Fest. Lollipop. Lollipop.
Oh, man, that's my fault. Sorry.
Sometime, I don't know what year it was, but we've told this story before that when I was just a little kid, 10 years old, 12 years old, probably 10, something like that, I had a little pretend radio station in the basement of our house on the south side of Chicago. You had a pretend radio station.
Yes, I did.
Did you, Schwani?
Yes, I did.
Andy, did you ever pretend anything?
Radio station.
He was the roving reporter.
You had a pretend girlfriend.
Hey, now. I had a pretend microphone walking around interviewing
reporter.
People.
Yeah, that's right. You had the pretend microphone.
People would run away
Lincoln
when they
logs,
saw you coming.
Tinker toy.
So we, this gives you a little insight into the three of us here and why we are the way we are. But I had this little pretend radio station that was called WCKD. And why was it called that?
What'd your call letters stand for?
Everyone had to have a W.
Right.
But my two other friends who, were behind the station were Charlie and Kevin.
And Charlie, Kevin, and Dean.
Charlie, Kevin, and Dean.
Not Mo, Larry, and Curly,
no,
but Charlie Kevin,
Kevin,
and Dean.
Dean, we ran the station. So the point of me telling you this is my mom goes with her girlfriends to the Empire Room to see, I don't even remember who they went to see, but it was a pretty big name. And my mom thought it would be cute if she got an autograph for me from whoever the performer was. And she tells the waiter, can you get an autograph for my son, Dean, from radio station WCKD? This is my pretend radio station that went nowhere. It didn't even broadcast any place. So the waiter takes the note backstage. My mother and her girlfriends all get invited backstage. They're in the. She goes, we get invited backstage. We're having drinks backstage. We got an autograph picture. And she didn't have the heart to tell the guy that it was.
It's a pretend radio station.
It's a 10-year-old kid's pretend radio station.
That's awesome.
She brings the picture back. I was like, wow, you got some connections. You got backstage.
Oh, wow.
Hilarious. Hilarious.
I never got that far.
Well, what do we have here today? We've got a little, you know, we're going to talk a little bit of Lollapalooza. Ariana Grande is headlining tonight. That's a big deal. We talked with one of the headliners the other day, Janelle Monáe. Had a wonderful sit-down conversation with her. We'll share that with you during the course of the program. And the reason that I wasn't here last week is because I had the grueling assignment of being in Hawaii doing some interviews. Oh, Shawnee, I want to tell you, it was tough being in Hawaii.
I could tell by the pictures that you were posting.
It was beautiful.
It was a struggle for you.
Very stressful.
It was a
sunsets
it was a
every
struggle.
Night. And tropical drinks, just very, very stressful the whole time while we were there interviewing Dwayne The Rock Johnson for his new movie, Hobbs and Shaw, that is on track to be the number one movie of the weekend. But we had a fantastic conversation with him. And, we'll share that coming up later on today. We've got a live performance in our theater segment today. We've got an abbreviated show because Andy insists on the White Sox pregame show starting early today.
I schedule all that stuff and, figured, you know what? You just got back from Hawaii. You need a short show.
Yeah, I'm a little exhausted, to tell you the truth. Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, that the White Sox call Andy and go, what time would you like today's game to start?
Yeah, so it's, my choice, usually, especially on Sundays. They defer to me on Sundays.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball calls Andy and asks him when the schedule.
I didn't want to brag, but yeah.
It's very humble that way. So we've got all that coming up for you today as well. And let's see, what else? Can I just tell you how sick to my stomach I am about the shootings, the two mass shootings that have taken place in less than 24 hours? The shooting in El Paso, Texas yesterday, and then overnight, the shooting in Dayton, Ohio. How many people dead in Dayton, Shawnee, right now?
9 victims, including the shooter. 10 total. Police took the shooter out. Evidently, he was refused admission into a bar in one of the districts in Dayton called the Oregon District. And that evidently set him off. Mayor Nan Whaley told reporters this morning that not only was he armed, but was wearing body armor and had plenty of extra ammunition.
Yeah, what's that about?
Yeah.
And that's, he didn't go there to go to a bar. He went there to shoot the joint up. It wouldn't have mattered one bit had he been denied entry or not. You go in there with body armor and ammunition. You are going there for one reason and one reason only.
Yeah. And in El Paso, Texas, the person is in custody there, the alleged shooter in custody. 20 people dead, 26 injured. And also, this is being investigated as a possible hate crime because
the person, that crazy manifesto.
Yeah, the person in custody apparently was posting things of hate rages and rantings.
Specifically, an anti-Hispanic manifesto.
Rant. Yes, right.
That a lot of people are now feeling enabled. They're bringing their own racism, their own hatred, to the surface, to the table. Because of what they're hearing in the national news. There's no question about that. All the presidential candidates have reacted. The president has reacted to it. Everybody is reacting to it. And, we're right back to the point where we always are with these kinds of shootings. I don't think we've ever had two of them within a 24-hour
period. Not this close together.
Right?
Not this close together.
But, everybody is reacting with the usual, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families, which is very nice. But how many of these things have to happen? That's what makes me sick, is that, all of the blowhard politicians are, my thoughts and prayers are with you. None of them are doing anything about this to try to come up with some common sense solutions to try to stop this from happening. There was a tweet I read this morning from Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I know he's an actor, but he's also an American, and he's a very thoughtful person. And he said, what leader will step up to command wiser and effective talks to find the answers? He said, I don't know what the answers are, but it all starts with open dialogue. And we don't have that open dialogue because everybody is too busy. If one side says the sky is blue, the other side says the sky is red, and nothing gets done, and more people get shot, how many people have to die?
Yeah.
How many senior citizens, how many kids who are, they go to Walmart to do some back-to-school shopping, and they wind up dead? How often does this have to happen before people start talking to each other?
We just ran the story at 9 concerning a woman who was heroically getting people out of the store.
That was heartbreaking.
And then this poor senior citizen could not move fast enough, and thus she was a victim.
Yeah. Yeah, she was trying to move people who were not able to move quickly enough on their own. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. It's sickening. It's beyond aggravating. I don't know what else can be said, except that if our leaders had any spines, had any actual leadership, they would be meeting right at this moment. They wouldn't be on a congressional vacation. They wouldn't be, sitting around and tweeting. They would be trying to solve this problem. They would be getting together at this moment to solve this problem. This is ridiculous in the United States of America. Do you know that there have been, 2019, just as of August 4th, 2019, 251 mass shootings. Yep. 1,032 people have been killed just in 2019. How many more have to die before somebody does something besides offer, my prayers and thoughts are with you? It's ridiculous.
And sadly, it's our duty to continue to update people on what's going on, which we will do throughout the morning and throughout the day here.
Yeah. All right. That's all I have to say about that, until I have to say it next time. A quick break. Shawnee, you going to update the news in a minute?
We will.
Do you have something a little more lighthearted?
Well, that's seriously, Dean, that is a challenge this morning. Far-flung forecast. Yes,
you got something fun for me today.
Not only fun but inspiring.
I don't want to be mad all day.
No,
today.
You won't be.
You already make me mad mostly.
I know that, but you know that's been the case since 1981.
Yeah, that's been 30 years.
Though. But no, seriously, we do have an inspiring far-flung forecast. The subject of which an extraordinary individual. Okay. So we've got that coming up.
All right. I have some new music for you for the far-flung forecast.
Oh, you do?
Today, yeah.
Okay. And what is that?
Go ahead and go with your intro.
Oh, okay. Our far-flung forecast. We go down south to Oakville, Alabama.
Shawnee, I will give you $10,000 if you can tell me who this is. I knew my 10 grand was safe.
Dusty Springfield.
This is Ariana Grande.
Ariana Grande. Oh, she's singing at that Hootenanny tonight.
She's headlining at the Hootenanny tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not Ariana Vente. It's Ariana Grande.
I would like an Ariana Vente with a...
Or is it Venti? Sorry.
Extra shot.
Yeah.
We go to Oakville, Alabama.
Oakville, Alabama.
Oakville, Alabama is in the northwest sector of Oakville, Alabama.
Ooh, okay.
It's real small. Real small.
This small?
It's that small.
Okay.
In fact, it may even be smaller than our beloved Mayberry. It's an unincorporated area, but it is also the birthplace of an extraordinary athlete who to this day, these statistics are amazing, and I am speaking of one Jesse Owens.
Oh, wow.
Who on this date... In 1936, at the Berlin Summer Olympics...
Oh, wow. He gave it to Hitler, didn't he?
He gave it to Hitler. And, Andy, you're going to have to help me out here because these stats here are just amazing. On this date in 1935, He's known as the Buckeye Bullet because he went to Ohio State University. Started the day, just for starters, by running the 100-meter dash in 9.4 seconds to tie the world record. 10 minutes later, he jumps 26 feet 8 1/4 inches to set a world record that he would hold until 1951. 10 minutes after that, setting another world record in the 220-yard dash with a time of 20.3 seconds.
All those are all amazing, amazing statistics for a human being to be able to perform like that.
And in the course of a couple hours.
Yeah, but my favorite, if you've seen documentaries on this or stories about Jesse Owens, the black and white footage that they have of Hitler, who thought that his athletes, his Aryan gods,
the superior race
were going to dominate, that he's sitting up in the press box thinking that, you know, his athletes are going to, you know, conquer everything in Berlin, at no less.
Yeah.
And here comes an African-American athlete that wipes out all the records. Hitler was not happy. The footage of him.
Oh, he was like confounded, talking, to say the least.
Yeah, talking to his assistants and, was like, what's going on here?
Yep. Yep.
A lot of those records wouldn't fall for a couple of decades.
Well, the one here until 1951, the high jump. And then there was one more. Owens ran the 220-yard hurdles in 22.6 seconds for its third outright world record of the day. And that it's still extraordinary to think after all this time of that happening. So Jesse Owens, born in Oakville, Alabama today. And they are having a nice day, sunny, for a high of 77 in Oakville, Alabama today.
Very nice.
That home of Jesse Owens.
Schwanny, that was inspiring.
Now, see, I told you that it was going to be.
You did say that I was going to be inspired. And if I was going to describe my feelings right now, I am feeling inspired right now.
I'm glad to hear that. We need
taking me out of my especially anger / frustration about the shootings.
Yep, we do indeed.
You did. Now, job well done, Schwanny.
Thank you.
As always. Thank you. It's my favorite part of the show.
You're going to bring a tear to my eye in a minute here.
Give Schwanny a raise. Can somebody give Schwanny a raise? Give him double what he got last time.
Cool. That's going to be easy to figure out, right? I was always told something times nothing is nothing.
Nothing from nothing
leads to nothing. Nothing.
That was unintentional.
You got to have something if you want to be with me.
I blame myself. I blame myself.
Are they playing at the Lollipop Festival?
Yeah, Billy Preston.
Okay.
Yeah. They're right after the David Cassidy show. That's
in the Partridge Family reunion.
Yeah. They don't have the Monkees, but they have a Monkees sound-alike band.
How about the Cowsills? They're on the other stage,
the
right?
The Cowsills. Wow. So for anyone under 80 years old, I apologize. You have no idea what he's talking about. Anyway, are we done?
Those were family-oriented groups. For family entertainment.
Don't forget the Osmonds.
It was, and the Osmonds. Wholesome stuff.
Yep.
The Brady Kids.
Are we done?
We're done.
Are we done with this?
Well, the sky is finally open. The rain and wind stop blowing. But you're stuck out in the same old storm again. You hold tight to your
WGN, Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
You'd be blind.
That is the amazing Kacey Musgraves. She's at Lollapalooza today. With all the rockers, with all the hip-hoppers, with all the headbangers that are out there, the lovely Kacey Musgraves. Also part of the mix. That's why, you know, people say, I don't know any of the bands there. I don't like any of the music that's at Lollapalooza. They have a really quite a diverse selection of music at Lollapalooza, if you care to look for it. And I think this is going to be amazing out at, let's see what time, 6:30 tonight. Kacey Musgraves at Lollapalooza. You know who else is performing at Lollapalooza today? The cast of Hamilton Hamilton the Musical. They did a show. It was just the female cast members that did a show on Friday. And they did like a one-hour set singing some songs from the show, but also some songs. They're all, you know, musicians and dancers and choreographers and, you know, themselves. So they also did songs from their own personal dossiers, if you will. And then after that, I hosted a Q&A with them. It was the female performers that were on stage, but the guys from the show were there to support them, and they all came to the Q&A afterwards, and we had a huge, like a one-hour discussion with the cast of Hamilton. It was really interesting, and they're all so nice and affable and hilarious and talented. So the cast of Hamilton, 6 o'clock today at Lollapalooza. I told you about Shaquille O'Neal, who is spinning. He's in the EDM, electronic dance music tent, the Perry stage, it's called. He's going to be there today. And then the big headliners for today at 8:45, the group called Flume. At 7 o'clock, Meek Mill, who has been in the news greatly, he is going to be performing. That is going to be a huge, huge, huge show tonight. And the big headliner, and a little bit of a surprise to everybody, because she is so pop-oriented these days, is Ariana Grande performing. And some people go, that's not a Lollapalooza kind of act. Lollapalooza's more, avant-garde, more alternative. She's not really, that kind of an act. I disagree with that. I think it's going to be huge. I know people are looking forward to it. It's the same kind of criticism that Lollapalooza took when Paul McCartney headlined at Lollapalooza. And everyone said, that's not a Lollapalooza. You know, it's a Beatle. It's, arguably one of the most popular people on the planet. So, so there's, just for today, there's still lots of big stuff that's going on. We've been reporting on it on WGN-TV all weekend long. We've got interviews. We've got concert highlights. Chance the Rapper made a surprise appearance. This was one of the big headlines at Lollapalooza over the weekend, that fans went to see the band Death Cab for Cutie. And who shows up on stage? It's Chance the Rapper. My story on this. Yeah, he just shows up on the stage. He's friends with the singer from the band Death Cab for Cutie called Ben Gibbard. And they recently did a collaboration for Chance's new album, a song called Do You Remember? And they performed the song live on stage at Lollapalooza the other day. And that was a big deal. Chance said, this is a moment in history. It's the first time we're ever performing the song in front of an audience. And went on to wow the crowd out there. But that's one of the most fun parts of Lollapalooza. I know some of you have never been. Some of you have no interest in going. But seeing some of the smaller acts for me, seeing some bands and performers that I've never heard of, and you get a real treat. I remember several years ago, I went to see a performance that some people had told me that you're really going to enjoy this. And I went, and it was a female performer, and she was amazing. Her voice was amazing. Her musicianship was amazing. Her stage presence was amazing. It was Lady Gaga, who was just a little baby Lady Gaga, playing during the day on one of the side stages. That's always one of the treats when you get something like that, or, you know, some huge name comes and accompanies somebody and it was unannounced, and you get a real treat. That's the fun of Lollapalooza.
You can say that you were there when they were up and coming, and then they become a superstar.
Yeah, well, it's just fun because you see them before the hype, you just see their raw talent. And I've said that about Gaga. I've seen Gaga several times. Her musicianship, to me, is the most impressive thing about Lady Gaga. I mean, I love her songs. I love her writing. I love everything. When she sits down behind a piano, it's stunning. It gives you goosebumps. When she's simply on the keyboard, no bands, no pyrotechnics, you know, none of the bells and whistles to go with it. And that's kind of what you saw at that show that I saw during the day. She also did jump out into the audience as as well.
Well, you mentioned...
I love when Tony Bennett does that, too. He starts crowd surfing.
That recording that the two of them did together is great.
Tony and Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Oh, yeah.
And here it is, Tony's birthday today.
Right. So. Actually, Tony's birthday was yesterday.
Yesterday?
Somebody corrected me. But I saw Tony, 93-year-old Tony Bennett, tweets this morning, it's my birthday. Tony's on social media, or somebody tweeted for Tony if he didn't do it, but I'll bet he may have done it himself. I love him that much.
He may have someone doing it.
Lollapalooza.com if you want to get more info, if you want to see some of the interviews and some of the things that we've been shooting out there the past few days. 815 area code texts in, good morning, Dean, because that's my name. Just wondering what you thought of the play Come From Away. Saw it yesterday, and we were blown away by how great it was. I actually have not seen this musical yet because I've been up to my neck in Lollapalooza. But I am going to go see it. I'm going to try to go see it next couple of days because everybody's been telling me how amazing this is. And, Shawnee, we have one of the performers from Come From Away who will be joining us today on our theater segment. You know what the actor's name is who's coming in?
Who is that?
James Earl Jones II.
Oh, really?
This is CNN.
I saw a play yesterday.
What did you see yesterday?
I saw True West at Steppenwolf.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What was it about?
Well, it's a little...
Is it about one of Kanye West and Kim Kardashian's kids?
It was written by Sam Shepard.
Okay.
A number of years ago.
That was one of the original plays that Steppenwolf did,
right? That's right.
One of the things that really put them on the map.
That's right. It was a revival production, fantastic production. And two things were going through my mind when I was watching it. One is I need to get out more. Two,
I could have told you that.
Stating the obvious, right? But the other thing was the level of theater and live productions that we have in Chicago. Yep. It's terrific.
Yeah, very true.
Absolutely terrific.
Very true. And Steppenwolf, I mean, you cannot go wrong.
No, you cannot.
Seeing a Steppenwolf show.
No, you cannot.
It'll leave you thinking no matter what the show is out there.
And this did. The other thing that struck me, it's a quite serious story, but there's plenty of comedy in it too. So there's this brilliant balance between comedy and tragedy in the storyline.
Okay,
about two brothers that are very different personalities and very different lives, and things intensify between the two of them.
Dave Schwann, theater critic. Very nice. And James Earl Jones II, coming up in our theater segment at 10:30 today. Here, where Chicago stories are told 24/7. 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. We've got for you this morning something very special. We're talking about Bernadette Peters coming to the Paramount Theater in Aurora. And we've got some tickets to give away to see the great Bernadette Peters. Bernadette Peters when she took over from Bette Midler and Hello Dolly on Broadway. She is so great. Such a great singer. I saw her in New York when she was in Annie Get Your Gun, and she was amazing. I've seen her, you know, many, many times in movies and on television and so forth. Outstanding singer. And she's going to be at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, Saturday, August the 17th, a one-night-only event. Truly Broadway royalty. She's one of the most talented, the most exciting on Broadway. And here's how I'm going to give the tickets away, because Bernadette Peters is such a great singer. I want to give the tickets away to someone who is also a great singer. Now, you got to call us up on our contest line, 312-981-7200. And you know we're going to get some great singers in here today. Call us up and, just sing, 20, 30 seconds of a little something. And if you're great, I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to see Bernadette Peters. 312-981-7200. 7200. Let's start off with, let me see here. Is this Aggie on the phone?
It is, Dean. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you. From where are you calling today?
Well, right now I'm in Chesterton, Indiana. I'm on my way to Father Blaney's Share leprechaun hunt.
Excuse me?
We have this wonderful priest, Father Blaney. He has a leprechaun hunt every year. You should come to it the first Sunday of every August.
What do you do? What do you do for the leprechaun?
We hunt for leprechauns.
Okay. All right. That makes sense, I guess. Sure.
It's his biggest fundraiser that he has.
That does sound like fun. So are you ready to show me if you're as great a singer as Bernadette Peters?
Oh, I'm not as great, but I'll give it a try.
You're going to give it a whirl?
I'll give it a whirl.
What are you going to sing for us?
Hello, Dolly.
Oh, just like Bernadette Peters, like we just heard. Take it away.
Hello, Dolly. Well, hello, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong.
I can just see you going from one end of the stage to another. I can just see you with your big feathered headdress, Aggie, with your leprechauns following you. I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to see Bernadette Peters at the Paramount on August 17th, okay?
Thank you, you moron.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That is an honor, for as anyone who listens to the Steve Cochran Show, weekday mornings between 8 and 8:30 knows. Here is Priscilla. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Hi, Dean. I really love your show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
But I just have to be a part of this. I love Bernadette.
I do, too. I think everyone's going to really enjoy this. What are you going to favor us with this morning?
It wouldn't be one by her because I would be too embarrassed to even attempt.
By
but
comparison.
I'm going to do the theme from New York.
Oh, theme from New York. Okay. Take it away.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it.
Ta-da.
New York, New York.
Oh, you're a good singer, Priscilla.
These vagabond shoes.
She's getting into it now.
Did I already win? I hope.
See, you're dragging your rap across the stage. You are working it there, girl. Yes, you did already win. Yes, a pair of tickets. Yeah.
Thank you. I did win them. Oh, goody.
Yeah, you did. Evening with Bernadette Peters, the Paramount in Aurora, Saturday, August the 17th. You've got your tickets for free, but if anyone wants to get their tickets, ParamountAurora.com. Priscilla, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day today.
Dean, thank you so much. I love your show.
That's very nice of you. I really appreciate that. Now it is 10:35. Time for the Week in Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? I can't think of too many shows that have come to Chicago in which so many people have commented to me that they have seen it and how much they love it. It's the show called Come From Away, which has just opened in Chicago. With a very, very, very interesting premise that seems to be really, really moving people. I have to be honest that I have not seen the show yet. Just being because Lollapalooza is going on, we've been up to our neck with breaking entertainment kind of stories. But I am going to get to go and see it because so many people have recommended it to me. And we're happy to have in studio with us one of the performers from the show. With the name, a name that you might recognize, connected in a kind of a distant way, James Earl Jones II is here with us this morning. Nice to have you with us. Good morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You even sound like James Earl Jones because you were explaining to me during the break, he is second cousin, you said?
Yeah, first cousin twice removed.
First cousin twice removed.
Yes.
Your father is James Earl Jones.
Yes.
And that's what makes you James Earl Jones?
The second.
Yeah. Right. Simple as that. But there is a distant relationship, and it's very, very nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Today. This show, Come From Away, is maybe one of the more interesting premises for a musical. Can you describe it for our audience?
Absolutely. So when 9/11 happened, all the planes were grounded by the FAA as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Remember what an eerie time that was? When
it was.
The skies were empty. It was quiet.
Which is something you'd never see.
Very eerie. Didn't even realize how noisy the planes made the sky.
Sure.
Until they were gone.
Until they were gone.
And everything was grounded.
Everything was grounded. And so 38 planes with 7,000 passengers from all over the world were grounded in a tiny town of only 9,000 at Gander, Newfoundland, YQX International Airport. And essentially, this town of 9,000 came together and brought the 7,000 people, many of whom couldn't speak English, got them off their planes, gave them food, water, shelter, clothing, everything that they needed, ways to communicate with their loved ones wherever they were, via phone, internet, gave them all the support that they could possibly get for 5 days, and then got them on their planes safely to their destinations.
This is a true story, by the way.
True story.
This is not something that a playwright sat down and go, wow, this would be a crazy premise for something where
right.
a small town in Canada suddenly, you know, their population practically doubles in a day.
Yes.
Instantly.
Instantly.
It's a true story.
Yes. And so we have been telling this amazing story. Essentially, 9/11 was showing us the worst of humanity, and this tiny town in Gander, Newfoundland, was showing people the best of humanity. And it's truly an amazing story, and I think it just makes it even more amazing that it is true and that it's not something fabricated.
Yeah, and what is your role in this?
So we have 12 actors in the show, and we play probably about 70 characters total, 70, 75 characters total. My main character is Bob, but in our playbill, you'll find that we're all listed as a main character and others.
Yeah, I see that in the playbill right. now, Bob and others.
Right. So, yeah, I'm playing about 7 more characters. Some of them have more of an arc. Some are mere blips, but we have a great time. It's truly an ensemble effort.
What people have been telling me about the show is that it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster. Would you say that that's fair with this?
I would absolutely say it is quite a roller coaster emotionally. I think anybody, certainly anybody who remembers it, experiences something very different than some of our young people who have come to see the show who may not have even been born at that time. But I think that this show does such a great job of conveying those feelings, the happier moments, the sad moments, that it doesn't matter whether you're 1 or 92, like you all go on a really amazing emotional journey. I think it is a testament to our cast and our creative team and the writers David and Irene that we bring together this amazing story that does move people. It is cathartic and it is healing, and I think that part of that is what brings the tears, is realizing, you know, perhaps some people for the first time, like, wow, this is perhaps something that I needed to offer myself a bit of closure. Mm-hmm. But it certainly sends us through the feelings, you know, but it is our job merely to do our best to tell the story and to not let our emotions get in the way of telling it.
I'm often amazed at what kind of thought process must go on for playwrights.
Sure.
And the people who write the book and people who write the score, to take a concept like this. So, you know, what was that meeting like where somebody said, let's take 9/11 as a premise and write a feel-good musical not about the tragedy itself, but just the thought process of the genius, really, of taking this tragedy and turning it into something which is a positive telling. And really, if you think about it, I mean, as horrific as 9/11 was, the positives that came out of it was how, you know, how as we came together for the most part as a nation, how groups of people were comforting each other with this as the horrible news was unfolding. We were watching it on television.
Mm-hmm.
But especially people who were affected by it, obviously the victims, but also the people who were on these planes that became affected by it as well. That somebody had that genius to write the story.
Yeah, you know, you got to give it to David Hein and Irene Sankoff. They're a married couple, brilliant writers. I can honestly say I've had plenty of conversations with them. And to a degree, I think that there was actually initially a little bit of a focus on Beverly Bass, who was the first female flight captain of American Airlines. But they did over 1,300 interviews and really came up with this amazing story. And I have to give it up for our main producers at Junkyard Productions, Randy and Sue, to think, well, it's time. You know, like a show like this, I think that there are probably a fair amount of producers, collaborators, who might not have agreed that this show had had a real opportunity on The Great White Way or anywhere. However, they brought this concept to this amazing festival, and I tell you, the various casts, because we have five of them throughout the country, throughout the nation, we couldn't be more happy to tell this story. And I think that a lot of people do get a little uneasy. There are people who say, well, how do you make a 9/11 musical work? But it's not really a 9/11 musical. It's a 9/12 musical, a 9/13 musical. Yeah. It's the days following.
Yeah.
And what they wrote, what David and Irene wrote, is like it is like no other show. And I think as soon as you really get into it, like your mood about what you thought the show would be like is immediately changed.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Maybe that accounts for the extremely positive reaction that I'm getting from people. Perhaps they're, you know, going in with one expectation and, you know, seeing what unfolds on stage, and so delightfully surprised by what they're seeing on stage that was nothing like what their expectation was.
Right.
Maybe that's why, I mean, you know, I hear comments about shows all the time, people reacting to my review or just sure. or just telling me, you know, I saw this and I liked this and I didn't like that.
Sure.
This show has gotten an inordinate amount of feedback on sure. my part. People telling me about it. So I think that kind of speaks to it. We had Becky Goldsfig,
yes.
who plays the captain,
yes.
the first female captain,
mm-hmm.
On our TV midday news the yes. other day. And we talked, and she sang a song about it's a song about the tragedy happening, but it's what leads up to it and what follows it. And, you know, that gives us such a fantastic perspective of what it was like for her as the first female captain,
yes.
dealing with the other veteran, all male captains, dealing with, you know, all female flight attendants,
mm-hmm.
reacting to the first female captain on a plane. And then the tragedy happens. And then she needs to become a different kind of leader and captain.
Yeah.
And it's you kind of see the evolution of, for her, what also evolves in the show, I think.
Yeah, I've had various conversations and dinners with Beverly Bass. I love her dearly. She is hands down one of the most amazing people that I've met. And yeah, just to talk to her and have her relay to not just myself, but to Becky and really all of us, anyone who's interested in knowing more, she will take you through like what she was thinking and what she was going through. And I think that it is truly amazing how she was able to keep her cool, how she was able to land this super huge plane. She had the largest plane. I don't think a lot of people know that. She was landing the largest plane. And
what I presume to be a fairly small airport, right?
Yes, it was. It's not super small, but it's very small when you're landing 38 right. huge planes.
Right, right.
I just think that it was a stick-to-itiveness. It was a grit. It was a making very great decisions in a very short period of time. And Beverly is amazing, and her song takes you through that, and it's amazing how in a very short period of time that song can take you through her story. Yeah. but it does, and Becky does an amazing job of singing it.
You grew up in Rogers Park, you said?
I did. I grew up in Rogers Park and Edgewater. I kind of split my time. I started most of my formative years in Edgewater, living right across the street from Pierce Elementary at 1454 West Bryn Mawr.
Yeah.
And then moved up to Rogers Park at 1622 West Chase. And then I attended Decatur Classical from 2nd through 6th, and then Whitney Young from 7th through 12th.
That's amazing. And then other musical training here in the Chicago area also, right?
I'm trained actually as an opera singer. I didn't really have any theater background per se. I did a few plays from 2nd through 5th when I first started getting excited about just entertaining at Upstage Downstage in Skokie, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
It was at 4411 yeah. Oakton. Judy Olwine was the creator.
I love your memory for addresses, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, a part of that is because my father was a CTA bus driver for so long, like it just sticks in my head.
Yeah.
But I didn't really focus on acting. I thought I was going to be a doctor. I did some singing, and eventually, after getting accepted to Emory University for pre-med, I politely rescinded my invite and decided that singing was probably a little less stressful.
Yeah.
But I didn't
know. How'd your parents react to that?
You know what? My parents have always been awesome about everything that I wanted to do.
Oh, great.
If I said I want to professionally ride bikes, they'd say, great. If I want to be a doctor, great. If I want to be a singer, great. They are hands down the most supportive parents. And my mother, truly a workhorse, getting me from point A to point B. And then if she couldn't do it, then my dad would step in. But, you know, my mother was a teacher. And I think she just, even though I'm her son, I think that in the bottom of her mind, she's like, I got to do this for the kids, you know, like
if
I'm going to encourage these kids, I'm going to encourage my son. I want him to do whatever it is he wants to do.
Yeah. Cause a lot of parents would not be so happy if their child gets accepted to pre-med and then decides I'm going to go into show business instead.
Well, you know that, and it's interesting because like I said, it wasn't musical theater per se. Like I didn't even know what a triple threat was until I'd say about maybe 10 years ago. Like if someone was like a triple threat, I'm like, I'm not threatening you three times. I'm just a regular guy. And they're like, no, that means you can sing, act, and dance.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Like, I was focusing specifically on opera, which is like, you know, classic Park and Bark. Yeah. You know, having done, I did Porgy and Bess at the Lyric Opera in 08. You know, like, for me, like, it was a completely different thing.
Yeah.
And then to find yourself doing theater or certainly musical theater, which adds so many extra elements, you know, it's it is truly an art on its own, but my parents were fully supportive.
That's fantastic. What are you going to perform for us this morning?
So I'm performing a song called Is Anybody There? It is from the musical 1776. And I wish that there was an amazing story behind it. Porchlight, Michael Weber, who's the artistic director of Porchlight, gave me the song to sing for something else. And it just turns out that it's a pretty amazing song. I had never sung it, and now I have it in my repertoire, and I'm going to sing that.
Here it is, with James Earl Jones II.
Is anybody there? Does anybody care? Does anybody see what I see? They want me to quit. They say, John, give up the fight. Still to England I say, good night, forever good night. For I have crossed a Rubicon. Burned behind me, come what may, come what may. Commitment, the croakers all say will rue the day. There'll be hell to pay in fiery purgatory. Through all the gloom, through all the gloom, I can see the rays of ravishing light and glory. Is anybody there? Does anybody care? Does anybody see what I see? I see fireworks. I see the pageant and pomp and parade. I hear the bells ringing out. I hear the cannons roar. I see Americans, all Americans free. Forevermore. How quiet the chamber is. How silent the chamber is. Is any there? Does anybody care? Does anybody see what I see?
That is phenomenal. Wow.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's James Earl Jones II. A texter from the 815 area code. That's my favorite song from 1776. Great job. 847 area code. Tell James we saw the show last night and we loved it. He was delightful. The music is wonderful. Hope to see the play soon. People are responding. People are responding to the show.
People are responding
like
to the
I
show.
Have never seen for a show before. Very
yes.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, I think that when the one thing to really think about is that this show is ultimately about joy and kindness and love and acceptance. And there are plenty of shows that are epic, plenty of shows with fireworks, plenty of shows with lots of dancing and beautiful music, but this show is unique. There is no other show like Come From Away. When people leave, they hug more, they shake hands, they smile more, they open doors for people. There is something very, it's something like, it just, you kind of like pass this feeling from one to the next. Yeah. It's very infectious.
Yeah.
And I think you just can't help but leave the theater feeling better.
Yeah, and these days we sure could use a little of that out in the world right now.
I tell you, I actually had another actor friend who came to see the show. Her name is Missy Aguilar. Hey, Missy. And so she came to see the show, and she came on stage backstage afterwards with her husband, Matt McMullen, who's also stage manager at Porchlight. And she was saying, when one of the actors said, go back where you came from, the audience in her section audibly gasped.
Gasped, sure.
Because that's what we're dealing with right now.
Right.
The crazy thing is, though, is that when people talk about how Come From Away is like very timely, considering our times, the crazy thing is that there are always times like this, and Come From Away is always necessary.
Yeah.
A story like this is always necessary.
Show is playing through August the 18th at the Cadillac Palace Theater here in Chicago. Tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com or 800-775-2000. James Earl Jones II. We really appreciate coming in.
I actually am amazed to be here. I absolutely thank you for having me. And if you'd like to see me sing a little more, Porchlight Sings. Porchlight Sings 25 is happening tomorrow at the Museum of Contemporary Art.
And you'll be there to perform live.
I will be there
live.
Singing.
Perfect.
Performing live.
Perfect. All right. Coming up in our next half hour, a couple of the interviews that I did the past week with Janelle Monae, who was here at Lollapalooza the other day. We'll share a great conversation that we had with her in a few minutes. And one Mr. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who's got the number one movie in America this morning, talking about his new film, Hobbs and Shaw. It's all coming up where Chicago stories are told 24/7. 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn.
No, that's my door. Pick another door.
What's wrong with you? You know what? You were right. This is your door.
What's the matter? You got a lot of bad guys behind that door?
Old clip from the number one movie in America this morning. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. Took in $60 million over the weekend. It displaces The Lion King as the top movie in America. Lion King drops back to the number two spot. Then it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Spider-Man Far From Home, and Toy Story 4. Last Sunday, I was not here live on the show. I was in, Kauai, Hawaii, doing interviews with the cast of Hobbs and Shaw. With Dwayne The Rock Johnson, with the entire cast. We'd also caught up with Jason Statham, with whom he co-stars in this film, in London a few days before that. And these guys are hilarious. I gave this movie a Dean's List A-. I think this movie is nothing but fun. You want to talk summer popcorn movies. Just go into a movie and have some fun. This is the movie. And people, from what I've been hearing, have really been enjoying it. I'm glad to hear that. Part of it is the trash talking that goes on between DJ, as they call him, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Jason Statham in this film. Two characters from previous Fast and Furious movies that now have spun off into this new Hobbs and Shaw franchise that, by the looks of it right now, is going to be a very, very successful one. It's one of the things that we talked about with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm a little concerned about this thing with you and Statham, back and forth. You know, we talked to him in London, and this is what he said. Very disturbing.
Yeah, he's a little jealous of me, you know. He doesn't like, you know, my sophisticated ways. He wishes he could get in a McLaren. He can't. He has to drive a big truck. He wishes he was a size 10 shoe instead of size 22. You know, he has to buy underpants that I could make a tent out of.
Dean, how is it that you sat opposite Jason Statham when his voice sounds like a nasally Harry Potter? Oh, God, I can't stand listening to it.
What's really disturbing to me is he's talking about your underpants. I mean, that, like, what kind of visualization is that from somebody?
I mean, well, think about that. That should give you an indication, a good look into the man that he is.
Yeah.
Right? He's wasting his time talking about my underpants. Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah.
So you imagine working on set with him every day.
So what was that? What was that like every day?
The truth is, it was a lot of laughs. It was just a lot of laughs. You know, Jason is a guy who, he likes to have a good laugh. He's also very serious at times, and, you know, I am like a shark when I smell blood in the water. If I know that a guy is that serious,
yeah,
and he's taking things that serious, well, then that's my opportunity to kind of shake things up a little.
I have to kind of think, though, when there is this outstanding trash-talking chemistry, anti-chemistry, that it's really, truly a great partnership, though,
it really is, Dean. Yeah. You know, you hope you get lucky every once in a while in movies like this where you have real chemistry in real life that can transfer to the big screen.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it could be appealing to an audience.
Yeah.
And we realized that we had something kind of unique in a throwback way, kind of like Lethal Weapon, the first one that came out, where there were just two guys who had this unique chemistry.
Right.
They're diametrically opposite of each other. And I had that with Statham. You know, I am American, and he is British, and I have my sensibilities, and he has his, and we come together. And
it was great.
Yeah,
you know what really struck me, and I actually got a little emotional about this, is how personal this must have been for you to bring your own culture into this. And was, I just learned a few minutes ago that your mother was on the set while you did the ritual scene in which you were speaking in Samoan.
Yes.
That must have been so emotional for both your mother and you and your family.
It really was. So Hobbs and Shaw is deeply personal to me. Number one, it's just a movie I believe in. I want the audience to go and have fun and have a good time. But also, you know, surprisingly, Dean, when you think about it, this is the very first time in the history of Hollywood that in a big budget movie like this that goes global, that the culture of Samoa has ever been represented and showcased. So it's a big deal. And we're all very aware of the responsibility. We were very authentic. We hired all Polynesian actors to play my brothers and my family. So the moment you're talking about was in the movie, we do a sivatau. And what that is the Samoan version of a Maori haka. And haka now made famous around the world. So it's very emotional, it's very intense. And you do it pre-war. And when we were on set that day, I was speaking in Samoan, calling on my ancestors for strength, to strengthen us. And we then go into, you know, very intense movements. And I look over, my mom lost it. I mean, she is crying hard. And we all continued to do the take, because once you go down that road, you don't come back when you're doing a sivatau. And once the director, David Leitch, yelled, cut. She was really wiping a lot of tears and so proud. In the moment, all my brothers went over, hugged her, kissed her, you okay? And she was just saying, I'm just so proud that our culture is being showcased.
Did you have that same feeling?
I really do, Dean. Yeah, and it makes me emotional. When I first saw the movie, and I saw the movie with an audience a few weeks ago at our premiere, was the first time I seen it with an audience, and it moved me, because it's a small little island in the middle of the South Pacific, but this idea that we're able to weave into the fabric of Fast and Furious, a movie that will go global, the Samoan culture.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud.
Yeah, it made him very, very proud. It really struck me in the movie that when he was tapping into his own heritage and his own culture. But the movie is just so much fun. I am recommending Hobbs and Shaw to you. Thank you, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, for spending some time. We also got to spend some time with one of the top performers at Lollapalooza this year. You know Janelle Monáe. She is a fantastic performer. You know her from the motion pictures. You know her music. You're into the music scene at all. She appeared at Lollapalooza on Friday night and just tore the place up. She's an amazing performer. Before she hit the stage, though, we were lucky to score an exclusive one-on-one interview with Janelle Monáe, talking about a big benefit that she was doing at the Museum of Contemporary Art.
So, Beautiful Future is an initiative that I've partnered with Belvedere on, and one of the things that inspired the Beautiful Future campaign was my organization, Femme the Future. And Femme the Future is a grassroots movement around helping women, those who identify as women, my trans women, who are in music and film and in technology, who want opportunities, that they're there but don't have the platform. They're not being heard. And so what I want to do is create opportunities, more opportunities for women, and more mentorship programs. And we partnered on that, and we did these brunches where we brought all these directors and producers and all these powerful women together. And we said, hey, let's keep this conversation going, because for them, getting those opportunities represented a beautiful future. And it's like, what represents a beautiful future for other marginalized voices? And so that's really what it's about, creating this conversation around community, around self-expression, and celebrating those who need to be celebrated.
I can't think of too many other artists who are as known for their art, in your case, music and acting, as they are for their social and political consciousness. It seems to me, as an observer, you're just as busy with that as you are your day job. Am I correct on that?
Listen, it's all one life. And I think at a young age, you know, when you grow up in a big family like I did, I have 50 first cousins.
What?
So we're our own community. Like, yeah. My mother had a lot of sisters and brothers. My grandmother was this incredible matriarch, and she took care of people, and she taught me about community. Like, I don't feel whole when I'm not contributing to my community.
Is there a downside to that? I mean, you do so much good for others. You empower so many others. You make others feel like, I'm okay. There's nothing wrong with me. I can. I see Janelle doing things. I can do things. But you must take some flack from it as well.
I think the pressure that I get is the pressure I put on myself. I think I can be doing more. You know, I look at so many community organizers who have their boots on the ground. They are marching. They are, you know, outside, you know, with signs. They're in the rooms, and they are really, really creating bills and laws. And every day, maybe they're working with kids in disadvantaged environments. Maybe they're in homeless shelters. Maybe they are, you know, just doing things that I wish that I had more time to do. So I try to do what I can. You know, I am an artist, and my art is important, and I don't feel complete when I'm not working on an idea, when I'm not working on a song, when I'm not working on a film. That's my purpose, and I love to create socially conscious music and art, and radical art, and I try as much as I possibly can to shine the light on others. A friend of mine, we were talking, and her name is Angela, and Angela said, how you use your light is your legacy. Do you want to use your light to shine it just on yourself, or do you want to use your light to shine on others? And I had to really think about that, and I sat with it for a few days, and you know, I knew the answer, but I really had to think about it. And the answer was, I want to use my light to shine light on other people as well, not just myself.
You've been so vocal about so many things, including the upcoming presidential election. Have you been watching the debates? Have you been, you know, sort of active as, watching what's going on?
Yes, this is one of the most important times to be watching. It's always important to be watching the local elections, and these elections where people are trying to become the next president. I have not endorsed anyone yet. I'm definitely voting Democrat. I will be watching closely, and I'm listening to what people are going to be saying about white supremacy. I'm listening to what the candidates will be saying about white nationalists, racism, bigotry, obviously jobs, women's rights, women's reproductive rights. Like, I'm listening, and I'm paying very close attention.
Yeah. I left Perry Farrell an hour ago, and he said that his, you know, I asked him what he's done Lollapalooza for so many years. What are his goals this time? Without batting an eyelash, said his goal this time is to register as many people to vote as possible at Lollapalooza, which I, you know, guys like him, people like you, that's admirable that you care that much about the future.
Well, we're humans.
And others.
We're humans. Like, regardless of how many shows we get to do, or how much we become famous, we still have to sleep in this country. We still live here. We still have, folks in our family who are working everyday jobs, who are really feeling the repercussions of what the government is doing and what this president is doing, and the GOP, what they're doing, all the things they're trying to repeal and the rights they're trying to take back. And so for me, it's like, I have to remain engaged as a citizen. We literally depend on each other for survival as a civilization. And I don't feel okay in my spirit or my soul resting in my success and blocking out, you know, what everyday people are going through.
Right. That's key this time.
Yeah.
Lollapalooza, there's so much buzz and excitement about your performance there. What can you tell us in the way of what we can expect?
Well, I'm super honored to be here and to be playing in Chicago and at Lollapalooza. I watched some of my favorite artists grace that stage, and you know, I'm thankful for the artists who have come before me and opened up doors. And you're going to get an experience. You will get an experience and memories I hope that we can make and you never forget.
And she definitely delivered on all of that Friday night out in Grant Park. Janelle Monáe, Childish Gambino, so many others. It's Ariana Grande headlining Lollapalooza tonight. We'll cover all of that, show you some highlights of the weekend tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. As I'd mentioned, Melissa McCarthy also one-on-one with her, talking about her brand new movie tomorrow on our WGN-TV Morning News. And as always, between 8 and 8:30 tomorrow morning, more on entertainment with Steve Cochran. We talk entertainment and showbiz, and we always have tons of laughs as well. That's all tomorrow morning on the Steve Cochran Show, which you can hear from 6 until 10. I join Steve for a full half hour between, right after the 8 o'clock news all the way to 8:30, and we always have a good time for that. Thank you for listening this morning. Stand by for White Sox baseball. That is all coming to you next. Andy Mazur has got your pregame, and then we've got all the play-by-play immediately following here where Chicago stories are told 24/7. Chicago's very own is 720 WGN. Chicago smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn.